11030, United States versus Moses. Ms. Farrell?
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Quincy Farrell for the appellant here, Mr. Moses. The district court below plainly and reversibly erred by imposing a duty to retreat on Mr. Moses. Moses pled true to technical violations and not true to the new state law violation at issue here, which was an alleged assault. The district court erroneously found that Moses committed this new law violation by imposing on him a duty to retreat and rejecting his self-defense claim.
Did he really impose the duty or just kind of grind through the facts? You know, here, you know, obviously this is a tussle between the two, et cetera, you know. Who's the aggressor, who's not? So is that so laden, you know, what a fact determination on, you know, it's assuming she was aggressor, she was not, you know, they're both kind of in it. It's a dynamic situation, right? It's not like some where we have, but it's dynamic. So I guess where I'm trying to lead you is just help me at least, or help us understand where exactly was the duty imposed, as opposed to here's a dynamic fact situation, two people in the situation, and you follow me?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
I apologize. So the court did make some findings that Moses made a good point on the evidence that the sister was the first person to act, that she was the aggressor, and that she went first, and that he believed that the force was, quote, immediately necessary to protect himself. However, he stated afterwards that the force was not reasonable because Moses could have stepped out of the doorway instead of retaliating against the sister. And so in intertwining kind of the excessive force prong and the duty, no duty to retreat, it misapplied the Texas law, which is Texas Penal Code 9.31F, which states that in determining whether an actor reasonably believed that the use of force was necessary, a finder of fact may not consider whether the actor failed to retreat. And so our position—
But isn't the usual case of a duty to retreat, like before hostilities start? I mean, in other words, you've got an aggressor, and the court did find that Quinchell was the aggressor, the initial aggressor. But wouldn't that be when the duty to retreat obtains? I mean, in other words, they were already fighting at this point, and they were well into fighting when the court said, well, you could have stepped back.
Right. I believe the evidence is that they were having a verbal altercation. She was guiding him out of the home, and that's when she was the first aggressor and hit him in the head with a lock. And so at that point, I think he was attempting to leave. He was attempting to leave the home. But he didn't have a duty to back out of that altercation.
But do you see what I'm saying? Usually the duty to retreat is before the altercation starts. You know, there's no duty to get out. If someone's aggressing or being aggressive towards you, you don't have a duty to retreat from that. But once you're already fighting back and forth, is that still the same calculus?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the duty to retreats, no duty to retreat, still applies there. I think at common law, it was you had to back yourself up against a wall to try to avoid a confrontation. And in 2007, Texas eliminated that requirement. And so I think that it would apply here once the altercation has already started. I don't
but
see
anything. As Judge Wilson says, normally we see due to retreat, it's, you know, before it gets gone. This is a domestic dispute between a brother and a sister. He comes to get his kids from her house. I guess he was standing. I mean, I watched the video a couple of times trying to figure it out. In some ways, who was the first aggressor sort of gets lost in all this. You know, the court was saying, well, you know, at a point when you use more force than necessary, does that sort of neutralize who was the first aggressor? So I'm kind of back to my first question. I looked at the video, you know, over and over, and looking at it, it's a domestic dispute between siblings. She says she told him to come get your kids and so forth, and all of that. It's just messy, to put it bluntly.
I agree, Your Honor.
You know, and I just kind of come back, the district court is trying to figure this out. You know, it's trying to figure it out. He acknowledged it. The district court acknowledged that she was the first aggressor, right? So I just don't know how far that gets you. Is that the trigger mechanism that once the district court makes a determination that she, rather than he, was the first aggressor, then that makes his other findings, you know, sort of get intertwined in this duty to retreat, as opposed to if he found that he was the first aggressor?
Right. So I think in finding she's the first aggressor, that that kind of shifts to, did he was he using self-defense? Was his attack in response to hers, and was it reasonable? And in determining whether or not it was reasonable, the court is not, according to Texas Penal Code, should not consider whether the actor failed to retreat. And in saying that he could have stepped 1 foot back out of the doorway, and that was imposing a duty to retreat on Mr.
Moses. All right, the proverbial question here is, what is our standard of review?
The standard of review is plain error.
Is what?
Is plain error.
Is what?
Yes, Your Honor. The standard of review is plain error. Mr. Moses did plead not true to the violation. He did assert a self-defense claim. But ultimately, this specific objection was not raised below.
So given what I've said, and I'm pushing back, that's why we like arguments. So you got to defend this. On a plain error standard, but he didn't object. In this mass of facts, articulate for me what our holding is, finding plain error. What is it we say?
That the district court I think that the finding that there was a state law violation is in question because of it didn't consider the
articulate the holding in terms of the plain error standard you gotta meet. Not just an abstract statement. Follow me, I'm saying articulate for me what the holding from our panel would be to hold in your favor the plain error that gives relief. How do you state that?
That the policy statement range was improperly calculated?
As a matter of law?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because of the erroneous imposition of a duty to retreat. And so under Rosales-Morales,
so the error is so palpable.
The error is
that
clear.
The error is so palpable that it overwhelms this mesh of entangled domestic facts. That's what you say.
The error is clear and plain from a reading of the Texas statute.
Okay.
It states that you are not to impose a duty to retreat. That was done here, and that clearly affected.
If it's so plain, why didn't he object? Unfair question. I take it back.
Yes, Your Honor. I think the tensions were high. It was a developing situation.
You weren't counsel below, right?
No, Your Honor.
You're saved.
Thank you. But this error clearly affected his substantial rights. The court repeatedly referenced this incident whenever it imposed its 20-month sentence. It said that this was what concerned the court the most, why it went to 20 months. And so we should take the court at its word that was its intention. And as I said, it warrants correction.
So if we found for you, we've articulated, what is it you would want us to do? To remand?
Yes, to vacate the revocation sentence and remand for further proceedings.
I mean, you still have time. I'm not cutting you off. I just wanted to, you know, be clear what the relief you're asking for beyond finding the plain error. What is it you're asking us to do with that?
Yes. So without the new state law violation, the range would have been 7 to 13 months imprisonment, and that's more than the top of the correct range is more than half a year below the 20-month sentence that was ultimately imposed. I mean, so we would ask for it to be vacated and sent down back to the district court to consider the duty to retreat in analyzing the self-defense claim. And if there are no further questions, I Change my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Any questions from the panel? You good? All right. Thank you, counsel. You've reserved your rebuttals. Were you trial counsel below?
I was not, Your Honor.
We like to have the people here who had to make these decisions on the ground. Go ahead. I'm just teasing. We like appellate counsel, but it's just good to ask the person who's on the ground, what were you thinking? Go ahead.
May it please the court. Lauren Murphy for the United States. Your Honors, this court can affirm on the first and second prongs of plain error review because the court did not err, and there certainly was no clear, obvious error on this record. So starting with error, the district court was faced with competing views of the evidence. As you noted, Judge Stewart, this is a messy domestic dispute. And so it assumed, for the sake of the argument, that the sister was the first aggressor, because even making that assumption, the amount of force that Moses...
Well, the sister said she was first aggressor, didn't she?
She never said that she was the first aggressor. She did eventually...
Well, I know she didn't use the phrase first aggressor.
Yes.
She came after him and she wanted him out.
So she does say that she got up off the couch and put her hands on his shoulders, not in an aggressive manner, to escort him out.
She put her hands on his shoulders in a non-aggressive manner.
Yes, Your Honor.
To get him out of the house. She wanted him out of the house.
She did, Your Honor.
All right.
So, but I think what the district court was doing when we're looking at this statement about you could have backed out 1 foot, I think what the court was saying is, look, there's competing views here, so let's assume she's the first aggressor. And the district court used that word, I'm assuming.
Well, you keep saying assuming she was the first aggressor. I take what she said as an admission that she was, I don't know what I said, first aggressor. She was the aggressor. I guess the law says first aggressor. She was the aggressor. She started with the physical part of this confrontation. I don't think there's any question about that, is there?
I do, Your Honor, because the evidence most...
So maybe he put his hands on her first?
No, Your Honor. Okay, if the sister did put her hands on Moses' shoulders, but there's no evidence
well,
in the
she wasn't
record.
Trying to hug him. She wanted him out of the house.
That's true, Your Honor.
All right.
But she, looking at the sister's actual statements, she says, I think her quote is when she did that, she says, I love you, but we're not going to do this, and escorts him out. The daughter describes that same interaction, and that's not an aggressive move by the sister at that point. But even if we say that first contact was aggressive, Moses's response to the sister's actions was unreasonable. And that's what the district court was saying when it made this comment about you could have backed out 1 foot, because it's talking about their position in the doorway and that the lock that the sister hit Moses with was connected by a chain to the door. And so the amount of force that she was able to impose with that lock was limited by the length of that chain. And so what Moses did in response to that, slamming her against the door, pulling her hair with such force that it pulled braids out and left bald spots on her head.
Counsel, all that sounds appropriate in connection to this proportionality of force analysis that the judge is supposed to be doing. But when he says all you had to do was back away for 1 foot, that sounds like retreat. So now we're not talking about proportionality of force, we're talking about retreating. And that's what the Texas statute says he doesn't have to do. Isn't that correct?
Two responses, Your Honor, because if looking at those words in isolation, that is one interpretation. But looking at them in context, as Judge Wilson noted, typically when we're looking at a duty to retreat, that's when an interaction is beginning. And the district court here said, I believe that you had the right to use responsive force. He said, that prong is met. It's the amount of force that I think is unreasonable. And that is correct under section 9.31A. It's the Texas statute says when and to the degree required. And so the court was saying the degree you used was not required in response to what she did.
Was not required because you should have retreated.
No, it was not required because what she was doing, hitting with that lock, was limited by the length of the chain. So you could have just backed away. You didn't have to slam her against the door and pull her hair out with that amount of force.
So
in your mind, back away doesn't equal retreat.
Not in this scenario, Your Honor, because he's not talking about you had a duty to retreat. He's talking about what Moses did in response to the force that was used against him. However, even if the court were to say that the district court did consider Moses's failure to retreat, that was not error under the self-defense statute, because the duty to retreat or the no duty to retreat is not an unqualified right. Okay. In Texas, a person who has a right to be at the location, has not provoked the attack, and is not otherwise engaged in criminal activity has no duty to retreat, and the fact finder cannot consider that. But if any one of those three circumstances is not present, then the fact finder is free to consider a failure to retreat. And there was evidence in the record that went largely undisputed that the sister, it was her apartment, and that she was asking Moses to leave. We see that by her statement that she was putting his children's things outside the door and asking him to leave. Moses himself says that in when he eventually gives a statement to the officer at the end of that video, he says, she was asking me to leave. The daughter corroborates that account as well. And so based on that undisputed testimony, the district court could have concluded that Moses no longer had the right to be in that apartment, and then the court could have considered his failure to retreat, if that's what the court was doing.
Let's go to the sentence. You know, you heard counsel's argument about the revocation. The district court did not impose the maximum 24 months, taking into account Moses' criminal history, I believe, but the district court also took into account, I guess, her criminal history, as it were. So, assuming arguendo, some duty to retreat found its way in there. Is there plain error on the sentence?
No, Your Honor, because Moses has not addressed the district court's statements at sentencing, showing its clear disapproval of the violent act. So even setting aside any improper consideration of a failure to retreat, the district court was demonstrably bothered by the violent act and the excessive use of force. It says that many times. It's the violent act that concerns it the most. And the district court indicated that typically when it has violence, it sentences at the top of the guideline range. So it has a clear intent to sentence these violent acts strongly, but it considered Moses' arguments at the hearing when it went below that guideline range. But there is a clear intent here that the district court did not approve of what Moses did, and based on that excessive use of force and the violence that was avoidable, the district court very likely would have still given this 20-month sentence. Or at the very least, Moses hasn't shown a reasonable probability of a lower sentence on remand, given the court's clear intent to sentence a violent act strongly. And I want to go back just briefly to the second prong, that even if this court were to find some error, any error wasn't clear or obvious on this record. Because of the application of sections E and F of 9.31, depend on the existence or absence of certain facts in the record, whether that duty to retreat clearly applied to Moses. Any error is not obvious on the face of the Texas self-defense statute. And this is unlike the Johnson and Jackson cases that Moses cites in support of that argument. In Jackson, the government conceded clear or obvious error that sex trafficking of children was not a crime of violence under the statute because it could be committed by fraud. That was clear from looking at the statute. And similarly, in Johnson, the district court plainly erred by relying on undisclosed facts at sentencing that enhanced a defendant's sentence. That was also plain by looking at the statute and at the record. Here, application of the self-defense statute is fact-intensive and often nuanced, as it is in this case. And so there simply isn't clear or obvious error, just by looking at the face of the self-defense statute, as Moses argues. Unless the court has any further questions.
So your position is the duty to retreat is not clear when I look at that Texas statute.
Yes, Your Honor, because it's not unqualified. And so whether or not the fact finder was free to consider its application to Moses is not clear from the statute. It depends on whether certain facts exist in the record. And here, because there was no objection, those facts weren't fully developed. And I would argue that that's because the district court wasn't imposing the duty to retreat clearly on Moses. There was no objection. And so those facts are not clear because they were not explored on this record. And so there was no error and certainly not clear, obvious record. Clear, obvious error, excuse me.
Okay. Yeah, no question.
Unless the court has any further questions, we ask that you affirm.
All right. Thank you, counsel. All right, Ms. Farrell, you've reserved your time.
Yes, Your Honors. A few points. If you take away the statement that Moses could have backed out of the doorway, there's nothing left of his excessive force finding determination by the court. That is the only thing that was referenced in finding that excessive force was used, is that he failed to back out of the doorway. And so I wanted to talk next about some exceptions that the attorney brought up about the duty to retreat, that it does not apply if a person does not have a right to be present at the location, if they have provoked the person against whom force is used, or if they were engaged in other criminal activity at the time. As to the first, that he did not have a right to be present at that location, it's my understanding from the record that he was living at that apartment with his sister. She called him and asked him to come over. And so he was also actively being led out of the apartment at the time the assault occurred. And so I do believe that he had a right to be present at that apartment. As far as provocation requires that Moses would have done some act or used some words which provoked the attack, that such an act or words were reasonably calculated to provoke the attack, and that the act was done or words were used for the purpose and with the intent that he would have a pretext for inflicting harm on the other. Those facts are not here on this record. And so next I'll move to as for whether the court could have considered this act absent a finding that it was a state law violation. So could it be considered for the other 3553A factors, even if it wasn't technically an assault under the statute? Under Rosales-Morales, there's no question that this affected the policy statement range. Yes, it could have affected the other 3553A analysis, and it maybe would have, but we don't presume that. And that's not clear on the record here. The fact is that the sentence lower than the range does not defeat this presumption either. It's obvious that this affected the policy statement range, and even on plain error review, that's presumed to be significant.
What do you contend the range would have been if the judge hadn't been considering his?
It would have been seven.
Hadn't imposed his duty to retreat.
It would have been 7 to 13 months, with just the
and
technical violation.
And it ended up being 20 to 24 months.
I apologize.
And the range ended up being 20 to 24 months.
The range was 30 to 37 months, but it was lowered by the statutory maximum of 24
right.
months.
Well, so then it was 20 to 24, or 20?
It was 24.
Okay, so it's 20 to 24. He gave him 20.
He gave him 20. The range was just the statutory maximum of 24 months.
Okay.
Well, the defendant had gone through in the colloquy, so I was up and reading, basically saying if it had been anybody other than his sister, somebody would have had to call for a gurney because the person would have been wasted. I guess that was to say he exercised some restraint as it would. The district court didn't buy that. The district court said he found the violation based on his history, which included an underlying federal charge for illegal receipt of a firearm by a person on that. And the second factor is the one that really I'm looking at, affording adequate deterrence. Here the defendant committed those violations. But I do get that she went first, which is why I went to 20 months instead of 24 months. And so notwithstanding it all, you cut him some slack by not maxing him out. So I guess what I'm saying is even if, a big if, plain error you reasonably believe that if this went back to the district court, your client's going to get less than the 20 months based on what he said on the sentence, not what you're saying. I just read the transcript part. He took his criminal history in part, and he cut him the 4 months because he deemed she was the aggressor. But the court found he, your client, still used more force than was necessary under the circumstance. So my point on the sentencing, he gave him 20 months, he said, rather than the 24.
Yes,
Your Honor. Do you have a case, is my question. Do you have a case that invokes the statute and said where our court has found plain error on sentencing under circumstances similar to here?
The specific Texas statute?
Yeah.
No, Your Honor. Okay. But I would just add that under Rosales-Morales, the policy statement range was improperly calculated. And so we don't presume that the same sentence would have applied anyway.
Well, I didn't say we're assuming it applied. I'm just reading you. He had the 24 months right in front of him to give him. He said, because I found she was the aggressor, not him. But the trigger point was the criminal history and the other violations. That's what got him into the revocation itself.
That's
right. And so I'm just saying, if you have a plain error case, not on these identical circumstances, but where we reversed finding plain error on a revocation under circumstances where the court, you know, takes his range. Sir, that's what I'm really asking, because it is plain error.
I don't, Your Honor, but because the policy statement range was incorrectly calculated, because the no duty to retreat was not considered by the district court, that is presumed to be plain error. But the fact that the policy statement range wasn't calculated correctly.
What's the case that says something is presumed to be plain error?
I apologize. I may have misspoke. It's presumed to be significant. It's.
Well, no, I get your point, and you're an able advocate on behalf of your client and doing a great job in making the argument you need to make. You're just faced with plain error as a standard review, which makes it a hurdle. Maybe not impossible, but I just wanted to know if we were overlooking a case where plain error on a revocation where the district court doesn't max out, our court has reversed. That's all I was asking. But you've answered, you know, the question.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honors. Moses respectfully requests that this court vacate the revocation sentence and remand for resentencing.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Farrell. Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for able argument in the case. The case will be submitted.